Hello, I'm Harry Bucknell. Thank you for downloading the Christmas edition of General Talk from the Army Benevolent Fund. December. The festive season is in full swing and Christmas nearly upon us. A time of great joy and family gathering for some, yet a time of great hardship and sadness for others. In the past year, the Army Benevolent Fund has supported over 75,000 members of the Army family in 51 different countries across the globe, including 86 charities and organisations that provide specialist care and vital services to the military community. Assistance that was given without help from government or army, but solely by fundraising for those in need. But the demands on the charity's resources, compounded by the cost of living crisis, increase every year. The Daily Telegraph established its Christmas appeal in 1986, which runs from the beginning of November to the end of January. Since its launch, the appeal has raised over £30 million for charities. And this year, the Army Benevolent Fund has been selected as one of the four organisations to benefit from the funds raised by the Telegraph Christmas Charity Appeal. To learn more about the appeal and how to donate, search for Telegraph Christmas Charity Appeal, where you'll find features, articles and interviews that explain the size and varied nature of the work the Army Benevolent Fund carries out to ensure that our soldiers, veterans and their immediate families can live an independent life of dignity, free from hardship. The debt we owe for the service they have given. My guests for this edition of General Talk are ambassadors for the Army Benevolent Fund. Brenda Hale OBE, who is the mother of 24-year-old Alex Hale. In 2009, life turned upside down for the Hales without warning. A setback which Brenda described as a chaotic abyss which the family were thrown into on the 13th of August that year, when she received that dreaded knock on the door and learnt that her husband, Captain Mark Hale, serving with the 2nd Battalion of the Rifles, had been killed in Afghanistan. "I just knew I had to protect my girls," she said, "and keep our lives as stable as possible." Alex features in the Telegraph Christmas Charity Appeal. So I caught up with Brenda in Northern Ireland and Alex in Brussels to hear their story firsthand. From happy memories of Christmases past, to the trials they had to overcome, to campaigning to improve the service widow's lot, and their plans for Christmas this year. I hope you enjoy the programme. Brenda and Alex, it is great to have you on the programme, but more importantly, it is an honour to have two of three ambassadors from the same family for the Army Benevolent Fund. And Brenda, you married to your late husband Mark for 22 years, much of which was spent with the Devon and Dorsets before they amalgamated into the Rifles. What are your recollections of Army Christmases when stationed abroad?
We were really lucky in the fact that during a lot of Mark's operational tours, he was always home for Christmas. So we were never apart for a Christmas. That's a real blessing. And I think quite unusual within Army families. But actually moving around and being an Army wife, I loved the moving around. I loved the new countries, all the different quarters that you got to decorate. It was like changing room on speed. I loved it all. And I would do it all again. It was wonderful.
What were your favourite memories of Christmases overseas with the Army?
My first Christmas carol service was in Wörl in Germany. And we had been married for 4 years, but we'd never actually lived on the patch. This is my first experience of living on a patch. So the Christmas carol service was on the first Sunday of December. So none of the guys had leave. So the church was packed because it was free mulled wine and mince pies afterwards. So you've got to imagine this little army church rammed with all these soldiers from every rank and file and singing away at the Christmas carols. And it then came to one of my favourite carols, and this became a favourite carol because of this particular carol service, and it was "God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen." And they sang it with such vigour and excitement that I just thought, wow, it just brought whole new meaning to that carol, because they were mumbling through most of the carols. But when this one came out, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, the whole church just like the roof nearly lifted off. And they obviously knew all the words. Maybe it was a rugby song at some point. Maybe it had been adapted to a rugby song, who knows. But it was good fun.
Gentlemen, arranged by David Wilcox and performed in 2015 by the choir of King's College, Cambridge, accompanied by the organist Tom Etheridge, under the musical direction of Stephen Clearbury. You're listening to the Christmas edition of General Talk, the Army Benevolent Fund's monthly podcast with me, Harry Bucknell, and my guests, Brenda Hale in Northern Ireland and her daughter, Alex, in Brussels.
And Alex, what is your first recollection of an Army Christmas when you were young? Because you were very young at that stage, weren't you?
I was very, very young. Actually, my earliest Christmas memory, Mum will know better the age. I was either 2 or 3. We were living in Ballykinla in County Down in Northern Ireland. And I got some mega blocks to build and a pink and purple tricycle that I absolutely adored. Dad loved to cycle, so the fact that I got to go on wheels and pedal too was a great joy.
But Brenda, going back to your times abroad, being away from your own family and your husband's family, that must have been difficult for you, wasn't it?
It was, and especially when Victoria and Alexandra came along, and if we couldn't get home, we missed our families. And that was all obviously on the days before Zoom. So you had to rely on set, you know, phone times, you just try and phone your families. But we were always surrounded with other families who also couldn't get home during that Christmas period. And the mess always had a nice Christmas party for the children, and Father Christmas always came. So you just got on with it. It was just part and parcel of Army life. And we always touched base with all the grandparents at some stage during Christmas Day.
But it must have been for a very special community on the patch. I always think those are the great times. Carol singing, the patch became very close knit, didn't it?
It really, really did. And once the children went to bed on Christmas night, you know, the parents would sort of get together, and it could be quite boozy at the end of the night. But it was really good fun, and we were all away from home. But just, and the fact that we were a family regiment, the Devon and Dorsets, and then the Rifles, we just all looked after each other, and we just stepped in where people may have needed extra help. So it was. It was a very special time, and I feel really humbled to have been able to experience all that.
As a Dorset man myself, they were a great regiment. I then want to fast forward now to August 2009, when your husband, Captain Mark Hale, then serving with 2nd Battalion of the Rifles, was tragically killed in an IED in Afghanistan. He was a very popular officer.
He didn't worry or panic. He was able to take a deep breath and just then think about the situation or the problem and then proceed. And that was a strength and a characteristic that he had from when I met him when he was a 17-year-old boy. He just had this composure, and that strength of composure calmed everyone else down, and it brought a real sense of serenity to a situation, and people didn't feel frightened and they felt a lot more calm.
He must have been a very special man, and I think that the news always focuses on the fatality, but actually it doesn't focus on the administrative issues that then beset a family afterwards, and that is quite hard and quite hard hitting. Can you describe some of the very strange and very sort of cold things that you suffered as a result of being an Army warrior?
2009 for the British Army in Afghanistan was their bloodiest and deadliest year, and so I can say this with hindsight. I couldn't have said it when I was in the middle of all that chaos. But with hindsight, I can look back and see the man and records in Glasgow. They were overwhelmed the casualty notification. Officers were overwhelmed. The RAF flying the bodies into Wootton Bassett were overwhelmed. But what happened with me was, because the regiments were changing from the Devon and Dorsets to the Devon and Dorsets LI, then eventually to the Rifles, that obviously entails an awful lot of administration. And what happened during that administration was that Mark's will was lost. And initially they tried to say he didn't do a will, and so his money and his wages went into probate. And so everything just stopped. So I woke up on the 13th of August, 2009, and I was a wife. My husband was serving in the army. We were paid up members of society. Our taxes and dues were paid to society. And by 12 o'clock when I was informed, all that had changed. The army at that time had stopped his wages in the morning because he didn't survive to the afternoon. So he got half
a day. Can I just confirm that? This is something which I find staggering. So because he was killed before midday, you got half a day's pay for his life that day.
Yes.
How did that make you feel?
That was the policy. I was outraged. I thought this was a man who, from the age of 16, had signed up to serve his country, who had done multiple tours away. So we spent a lot of time alone, who had paid his dues. And in the morning of that explosion, the initial explosion, Mark wasn't hurt. Mark wasn't involved in it. And he stepped into the bomb to save his soldiers. And so he paid the ultimate price. And the government at that time thought his life was only worth half a day's wage. That has since changed. But I think because Mark was the longest serving soldier to be killed in Afghanistan, and in army terms, at age 41, I was a really old wife. I knew the system a little bit better. So I was able to get on the phone to my husbands and my friends who were further up the chain of command and start saying, what's going on here? What can I do? We have no money. It was just an absolute mess. But I was thankful that all those people I called on to help were able to help.
And so this is when the Army Benevolent Fund stepped in. Alex, would you like to then take up the story while you tell us what happened after that?
Of course. So obviously, the situation went from worse to worse. We were left in a situation where 2 weeks out from the start of a new school year, we were faced with the potential that I would have to move to a new school and make new friends, all from scratch, 2 weeks after Dad had been killed. Nobody really initially had any answers as to how we were going to deal with this. And then I believe it was Colonel Rob who directed us over to the Army Benevolent Fund, who immediately just stepped in and sorted everything that needed to be sorted out. And if I'm honest, I had no idea that that was going on. I found out about this, you know, down the line. For me, it just felt normal. I went back to school as I should have been going back to school. And I had no idea. So I can only imagine the amount of relief that provided Mam. I'm very grateful for it now.
And Brenda, you were given a 3-year grant by the Army Development Fund, mm-hmm. which enabled Alex to have that stability at a terrible time in life. The Army Benevolent Fund effectively held your hand at that moment. Is that fair to say?
Oh, Harry, 100%. Whenever you get that knock on the door and they ask, are you the wife of Captain Mark James Hale? And you fall into this chaotic abyss. I mean, I couldn't speak, I couldn't breathe. And I just knew I had to protect my girls and keep our lives as stable as possible. And so when the ABF agreed to fund Alex's last 3 years of prep school, I wasn't asked to fill out any forms. They didn't phone up and take it and ask any questions. All that was done with Colonel Raw behind closed doors to make it as easy and as unemotional for me as it possibly could be. I can't, what they give me in those initial hours after Mark was killed, it was they stepped into his boots, which would make him incredibly proud.
If I can just be clear, where were you living at the time?
We were based in Northern Ireland. Well, at that time, we were actually living in our own house. So we had house insurance on the house. My thing was, was because I'd lost his will and it went to probate, was that I had a mortgage payment at the end of the month and his wages had stopped and I couldn't get access to anything. So it was payment of the mortgage payment. It was payment of the mortgage and just buying the school uniforms and just all those immediate things like food and diesel for the car became a huge pressure. So when I knew I didn't have to look for school fees, but I could at least send Alex to school and she was going to have some level of continuity and normality at this little 8-year-old child who just could not understand because daddy was away anyway. She just couldn't understand that he wasn't going to come back with all the other daddies.
And the same, of course, applied to Victoria too, who was also at school.
Yes, she was at boarding school and that was looked after for her final 2 years. Harry, I was in such a bad space after Mark was killed. I could hardly look after myself, never mind the children. So the fact that the ABF stepped in and they were just doing this behind the scenes with, I imagine, with my notification officer, who was a Captain Mears, with him and probably with our unit family's office. They were doing all the background work, so I just didn't have to cope with any of that. All I knew was that the ABF were going to enable Alex to remain at her school.
Well, that's all that mattered at that time. That must
have been 100%.
A huge relief. And it doesn't matter, of course, whether you're an officer or another rank, the service is the same that the charity provides.
100%. They promise to look after you whether you've served for one day or whether you've served 35 years. And for us, knowing that the work at the ABF have done since, because we've been involved in ambassadorial roles, to see how they reach out to so many people. And what they're giving is a hand up. As Army families, we're incredibly proud. We don't want to take charity. We don't want to, you know, we want to be the ones helping. We don't want to need help or require help. So to be able to see how they just deal with all these welfare issues and all these difficulties that may arise out of service to your country is actually quite humbling to see, because these people in the charity are dedicated and they work so hard for people you and I will never, ever know or meet.
You have spent many years campaigning for war widows' rights. What have you achieved since Mark's death and in his name, really, effectively?
In Northern Ireland, because we have a devolved government and because of our long and challenging and troubled history, the military covenant was never, ever implemented in any shape or form in Northern Ireland because we had one part of the government, Sinn Féin, IRA, stopping it. They would not recognise the British Army in Northern Ireland. And so when our troops came back, they weren't able to access the hospital care, the mental health care, housing, that if you were stationed in Scotland, England or Wales would just be a matter of course. And so I just wanted to look after the boys the way that Mark looked after his boys. And I got involved in politics and I campaigned very, very long and hard on the military covenant issue. And I just took it on my shoulders to honour Mark's memory by trying to implement some elements of the military covenant in Northern Ireland. So soldiers returning home injured or needing mental health support would have that freely available as if they were stationed elsewhere in the UK.
The troubles are now over, and therefore maintaining that peace is so important. And you must have been elemental in fighting to ensure that peace remains and that we are still in that joyous situation today.
Yes, and Northern Ireland is a completely different place from when I first met Mark in 1985, and he was based in Northern Ireland when it was at the height of the Troubles. You know, when he came to stay with me, he couldn't answer the front door. He wouldn't speak in a taxi. He wouldn't answer the phone. But being 6'4" and a big, deep Dorset accent, he was quite hard to hide.
I'm bound to ask, Brenda, how did you manage to find him in Northern Ireland when there was no internet at that time?
He came to my local disco and he shouldn't have been there. And I certainly didn't go to discos where British soldiers went to, because nice girls did not fraternise with British soldiers. And he told me he was a firefighter. And I thought, well, what firefighter comes to Northern Ireland on holiday? So, but his deep green eyes and his Dorset blarney won my heart. And 2.5 years of writing letters, being wooed the old-fashioned way, we got married.
You were a member of the Legislative Assembly in Northern Ireland from 2017 to 2017. That perhaps proves the mettle of army wives, who are always, I think, undervalued because of the role they perform in support of their husbands or spouses while they're overseas in operations. And you achieved a great deal of result that. In June 2018, you were victim of what you consider to be a practical joke.
Oh, yes, yeah. I was nominated for an OBE, for political service, and that came as a complete shock because you don't... I wasn't campaigning for the military covenant for any sort of recognition. It was just to look after the boys. And I suppose I didn't get mad. I got even in the fact that we do have the semblance of a military covenant now in Northern Ireland. And that was recognised at government level. And I was awarded an OBE, which is a huge honour. And I was delighted to receive it from Prince Charles, as he was then. We had a fab day out in London. Quite often, you're not near family, as we discussed earlier. So you need to be able to have childcare on your agenda because you are the childcarer. The rest of the population don't know because army families are less than 1% of the UK population. So we are a hidden gem. We are a hidden treasure throughout this country and throughout the world where we're supporting our husbands and wives on the front line.
Let's talk about Christmas this year. Alex, you're in Brussels right now. Where are you headed?
I can't wait to head home very, very soon, in a matter of days, back to Northern Ireland to spend Christmas with Mum and our family on the North Coast, which is very exciting. I might even go into the sea for a swim. We'll see how brave I'm feeling on Christmas Day.
Brenda, will you hold your daughter to that?
Oh, I'll be in the water with her. We have winter wetsuits, so we're not being that brave, but it is the North Atlantic, and next stop is America, and it is very, very cold here. So we like to try and do a winter swim either on Christmas Day or Boxing Day.
Alex, tell me about some of the family Christmas traditions you've got going on in the Hale household.
I'm mostly looking forward to Mum's wonderful roast potatoes.
Okay, right. Now, Brenda, come on now. We've heard about these. These aren't roast potatoes. These are special Christmas roast potatoes. What's the secret of the Hale household Christmas potatoes, please?
Oh, Harry, I can only tell you. You promise not to tell anyone else.
I promise not. Your secret's safe with me and this podcast.
Oh, I'm really, really glad to hear. So what we do, you have to potboil your spuds.
Yeah.
And then you drain them.
How long for?
Until they're still going to be quite hard to touch, but they're just starting to go fluffy around the edges. You then dry them slowly on a low heat. You add flour, salt and pepper, and then you add them into a roasting tin with smoking hot oil, and you roast them for 30 minutes, and they are the crispiest, fluffiest roast potatoes you will ever taste.
There you go, folks. That is the Hale household Christmas potatoes recipe. So parboil your potatoes and then deep fry them, basically, after that.
Yes, but you need to dry them off. They have to be dry going into the hot oil. They've got to be covered in flour and salt and pepper. Otherwise, they don't crisp with the hot oil.
We'll all be trying this at home, I'm sure, on Christmas Day. Alex, on Christmas Day, I know that this is a time for celebration, but you must think also of your dad. How do you remember his memory that day?
Christmas morning, Harry, when I was a young child, vivid memories of Dad filming it on his camcorder, you know, proper dad style, watching us unwrap all of our presents. I think I miss that the most, that sort of charismatic dad on his, you know, whatever latest camera he's got, you know, his excitement watching my sister and I be excited and his joy for us. But I think as with most of his attitudes towards life and everything else, including his joy for Christmas, is just how my sister, my mum and I have sort of carried just that joy on, and his attitudes towards everything, it just sort of emanates throughout.
And Brenda, you've done so much for the War Widows cause and for the whole family, you've done so much for ABF. What is your message to soldiers, veterans and their families for Christmas?
I want to wish them all a very happy and peaceful Christmas. And know that There are people out there who are thinking of them wherever they may be. For those army families who are separated this Christmas, we are sending our love and our prayers. And for those army families who are together, we're sending love and prayers. And just that in times of need, if you ever need someone to reach out to, the ABF will always be there. They are there for soldiers for life.
Brenda, Victoria, Alex Hill, three very special people. Thank you so much for all you've done, for all you do, and for being my guests on General Talk this Christmas. A very happy Christmas to you both.
Merry Christmas, Harry.
And my thanks once again to Brenda Hale and her daughter Alex for being my guests on the programme. 8 years on, the central purpose of the Army Benevolent Fund remains the same: safeguarding our soldiers, veterans and their immediate families so they can live a life of independence and dignity for the service they have given and still give to their country in guaranteeing our freedom and liberty. It is the debt we owe them yesterday, today and tomorrow. You can help the Army Benevolent Fund repay that debt by visiting the Telegraph Christmas Charity Appeal online or going to armybenevolentfund.org and clicking the red donate button at top right on the web page. And finally, on behalf of Major General Tim Hyams and everyone at the Army Benevolent Fund, wherever this may find you, on operations, on duty, on leave, or at home with family and loved ones, I wish you all a very happy Christmas and great good fortune in the year ahead. From me, Harry Bucknell, thank you for listening and farewell. Sleigh Ride, composed by Leroy Anderson, was played by the band of the Grenadier Guards under the musical direction of Major Stuart Watts. Home for Christmas was written and performed by the Military Wives Choirs under the baton of Hilary Davin Wetton. Series editors were Jenny Redman and Natasha Theobald. Studio editing was by Michael Ciliano. This has been a Gamekeeper production for the Army Benevolent Fund podcast.